ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः परकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं भजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधा कृष्ण पादान सहगण ललिता शिव शाखा। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। श्री पराशर भट्ट has offered three meanings for the name Tirthakara. Two of them we have discussed. The third, he who is deep like an unfathomable ocean, but makes it possible, like even the ocean itself is difficult to reach. It's like, for instance, in the days prior to air travel by mechanized means, it would be if someone is living in Tibet, it would be very difficult for them to reach the ocean. You might hear about it, but it's so far away and so hard to reach. So Bhagavan is like that. You hear about, but how are you going to go? But he makes it possible by a series of steps to reach him. There's that story of that Chinese Buddhist monk who came to India. He came to India to get knowledge of Buddhism because there wasn't much knowledge in China at that time. I can't remember his name. So he had to come by. Very, very difficult journey he had to make. Oh, first of all, the different authorities, the kings, they didn't want them to leave, and then he had to cross deserts and mountains, and somehow he came. He prayed to Buddha. Mahayana. In Mahayana, you're allowed to pray. in the Theravada, you're not supposed to pray if you're really to follow it strictly. Anyway, it's very difficult to reach, but he makes it possible through. Specifically by coming in as various avatars, which make it possible to see him, hear about him, hear him directly if you're there. If Krishna hadn't come to this world, who would believe such pastimes? Even now people, they don't believe, they want to see him. They think that miracles is a sign of spirituality. Yeah, miracle means something that we don't understand. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that he gave several examples. One of the examples he gave that a child may say, well, he himself, he had the experience. When he was a child, he thought that the tram line was there in Calcutta, still there, on Mahatma Gandhi Road, at that time known as Harrison Road. So Prabhupada saw that the tram line is there. And it's the so Prabhupada thought, if I get a stick and I can make it high enough, I can reach the tram line, then I can go along like that. He didn't realize the mechanism. He didn't give that as a child, he thought like that. Then an example he gave that is, if a child sees a car from some distance, he may wonder, how is that moving? But an experienced person knows there's a driver inside the car. So in many cases, what we call a miracle is something that we don't understand. Now that's what atheists also say. Just we don't understand it, and everything is explainable by science. Interesting that most scientists don't even take up the topic of reincarnation. They just don't want to investigate it because they know it would be very hard for them to explain in terms of their materialistic theories. So certain things they don't touch, like the existence of ghosts, even though there's so much evidence since time immemorial, but it's the kind of thing that scientists don't even want to think about because they it'd be very difficult for them to explain. So, but if Krishna comes and he performs activities, not a miracle like a Sai Baba who puts something up his sleeve and then makes it appear and pretends it's some magic trick. Not that kind of thing. And not even the yogic siddhis. By yogic siddhi, one can read someone else's mind, control someone else's mind, if they're weak-minded especially. One can become smaller, so invisible, by becoming very small. Srila Prabhupada gave an example of Tailanga Swami living in Varanasi in the 19th century, maybe. He was very famous. Tailanga Swami, because he came from Telangana. He was living in Varanasi. He used to walk around naked. He was a yogi. Some yogis do that. They may do. So the British administrator at the time, that area, decided this is indecent and arrested him. Put him in prison. And then he was walking around the streets again naked. Because he can become smaller than the smallest, he can escape very easily. So they arrested him again. A little later they saw him outside. Then they didn't bother trying to arrest him anymore. So these kind of things, it's a miracle, but it's not a miracle if one knows the science. There are means by which one can manipulate material energy by yogic powers, but Krishna's activities are not activities which are imitable by yogis. For instance, he appears from the nostril of Lord Brahma and then assumes a huge form as a boar or as Vamana avatar. He covers the whole universe in two steps. So he does things which are impossible even for the greatest yogis. Therefore he's known as Yogeshwara. Very pertinent that his name is stated in the last verse of Bhagavad Gita, which means that it's okay, time for action. Enough talking, and now time for the fight. It got delayed a bit. Already the conches are blown, which means it's time to start the fight, but there's a little interlude, a little most unexpected thing, just before a battle, have a philosophical discussion. That's what you do when the battle's finished. Either you win or you lose, but most unexpected. And from the rational point of view, the Kauravas should have won the fight because they had the biggest army and they had the best fighters. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada said that Arjuna was like a fig in comparison with Bhishma. You have any trouble fighting the figs on your fig trees here? And since you expect any opposition when you go to pick them, it's just. Although there was that one time, at least one time, when Arjuna, the Brihandala, the eunuch, he's a eunuch, and he attacked all the Kaurava forces with Bhishma and defeated them all. He was in ecstasy. He'd been a eunuch for, you know, what a punishment to be a eunuch. Krishna, Klaibyang Masma, you're still a eunuch, Arjuna? Remember, that's over now. You're not supposed to be a eunuch now. That was over. So, Arjuna is just in ecstasy. It's like, immediately after his 12 months as a eunuch is over, immediately he gets back to being Arjuna, not just in name, but in activity. Arjuna is not meant for sitting around and talking and time pass. He's meant for fighting. Arjuna is there, but somehow he's compared to a fig in comparison with Bhishma. I guess he had so much pent-up energy and out of practice, but he was so much enthusiasm, whereas I guess Bhishma wasn't so enthusiastic about stealing the cows from Maharaj Virat. It's not the most heroic thing a Kshatriya could do. is go and steal some cows. That's a pretty low class thing to do. Here in India today, the cow thieves, they're not Kshatriyas, they're just very low class people. So Arjuna, he was in bliss. So Arjuna, but he was compared to a fig in comparison. And Bhishma is a Drona. Bhishma, he said, myself, I can kill all the warriors. I can kill all the army. Everyone, you can all go and sit back. I can kill them all myself. But he wasn't that enthusiastic, as Duryodhana accused him one time. So even Arjuna being such a great fighter and Bhima being such a great fighter, but they were not expected to defeat. But Yatra Yogeshvara, Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanudaraha. Krishna Yogeshvara, he operates at a different level, even to the yogis, who can do so many apparently impossible things. But Yatra Yogeshvara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanadharaha. He does it for his devotees. When he's with Arjuna, he'll do anything. Otherwise, what's the fun? Why should he do it? He does it for his devotee. He did all kinds of things. We know so many things that Krishna did for... Karna's weapon, and then Krishna just pushed the chariot down so the weapon went over Arjuna's head. Then at the time of when Jayadratha, Arjuna had to reach Jayadratha before sunset. So the sun set and it still hadn't reached him. And Arjuna, everyone thought, it's all over, great. Now Arjuna has to enter fire. But Krishna just went on driving the chariot. The sun hadn't set. He just made an illusion of that. So that the yogis, they can't do things like that. They don't have any such power to do such things. So many ways. When the battle was over, Krishna told Arjuna, you get off the chariot, and they all went into flames. Because Krishna, so many weapons had been thrown, and Krishna diverted them onto the chariot, and any one of them could destroy the universe. But Krishna just kept their power. But they had to do something, so when the battle was over, he let them burn up the chariot. So in so many ways, Krishna, he shows his inimitable powers so the devotees, they can faith in him. Of course, those who are pure devotees, they don't need to see, but for others, they become very happy to see. And later we hear about that. And the atheists won't believe it. The atheists won't believe it even if they see it. A great example is Duryodhana himself, when he wanted to kidnap Krishna. And then Krishna expanded himself in so many forms. So you want to tie me up? Okay. Here I am, and here I am, and here I am, and here I am, and here I am. Tie me up. And he realized the impossibility. So hearing this, the devotees become very pleased. And Shrinu Sukadam Shupadam Bhavasar. They become very pleased, and it becomes very auspicious in this world of birth and death to hear about Krishna. Srinvanti Gayanti Grananti Abhikshna Sasmaranti Nandayanti Tave Hitam Janaha Ta Eva Pashanti Achirena Tava Kam Bhava Pravaho Paramang Padambujam. Kunti Devi says that those who hear about Krishna, chant about Krishna. Well, she's saying to you, because Krishna is standing right in front of you. Who accept in their heart Krishna's wonderful qualities, who remembers it, who takes pleasure in that, or in pleasure in hearing others glorify Krishna. Then, for such a person, they no longer see birth and death. They see, by seeing Krishna and hearing about Krishna, they become free from birth and death. So Krishna comes to this world to give auspiciousness to this world, to make it possible for people to come to him. And you may say, Krishna's not present here. He is present, just we don't see him. But he also sends his devotees into this world, and they make a chain by which we can hold on to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, and he's holding on to the lotus feet of his guru, and goes all the way up to Krishna. So in this way, Krishna arranges means for us to cross over there's a huge gap. How can we reach Krishna? Krishna is so much greater than us, but he provides a means for us to access his lotus feet. Another commentator, Krishna Datta Bharadvaj, taking kara here to mean hand, he says that and tirtha to mean that which purifies. The holy places purify us. Well, anything that purifies may be called a tirtha. So just by the touch of his hand, he purifies. And Krishna Datta Bharadvaj gives the example of Gajendra, who was delivered from the body of an elephant by the touch of Lord Vishnu, but more importantly was delivered from the ignorance that accompanies such a body. He was a highly elevated devotee, but circumstantially He was cursed to take the form of an elephant, and in the form of an elephant, he forgot all about his spiritual advancement. But then in the time of great difficulty, he remembered and he prayed to Lord Vishnu, the Tatratang Buddhi Asamyogam Labante Paurvadehikam. He remembered from his previous life as Indrajumna how he'd prayed to the Lord, and he recited those prayers, and the Lord came, and by the touch of his hand, as stated in Bhagavatam, Gajendra Bhagavat Sparshad Vimukto Jnana Bandhanat Prapto Bhagavato Rupam Pita Vasash Chatur Bhujaha. Because Gajendra, king of the elephants, had been touched directly by the hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was immediately freed of all material ignorance and bondage. Thus he received the salvation of Sarupya Mukti, in which he achieved the same bodily features as the Lord, being dressed in yellow garments and possessing four hands. Another commentator, Satya Devo Vashishta, who always gives a meaning which no one else gives, and a meaning which is different from what anyone might imagine, but all supported by Sanskrit linguistic analysis and Shastric understanding. So he gives the meaning of the name Tirthaka. He, as the one who makes the sun and all the planets move around. So in the Tirtha is used in the sense of crossing, moving, and Kara, he makes it possible. He does it. He moves the planets and all the sun and everything else. So that's the meaning that Satyadeva Vashishta gives. Tirtha, the most famous Tirtha is, that's the important point. I was saying that we connect with a tradition that we have the descriptions of the holy places in Shastra, and then people go and see, they who hear about in Vrindavan, that's the place where Krishna killed Keshi. That was the first Leela that I read in this lifetime, in one of Srila Prabhupada's books, before I'd been allowed to join this movement, Krishna Book Volume 2. And at the beginning, the first chapter in that book was Krishna killing the Keshi demon. So one can say, you hear about it, then you go and see it. And then it becomes very deeply implanted in one's consciousness. One relates to it. It becomes part of one's, it already may be part of one's whole faith system, but becomes very deeply implanted, and one feels very close to Krishna by visiting these places. And what we heard about, and we see the place and touch the dust of that place, we may recite kirtans in that place relevant to the various pastimes, and we feel very close. We feel closer and closer to Krishna. Devotees who live in Vrindavan, and naturally they feel close to Krishna. Not only the devotees, but even in Vrindavan and Mathura, even the Muslims who are not supposed to be devotees of Krishna, they also feel a closeness to Krishna, because the very atmosphere of the spiritual atmosphere of the place makes them feel like that. Many of them, maybe not all, but many of them feel like that. And what to speak of those who are deliberately cultivating a sense of Krishna consciousness, for which most people go to Vrindavan and may go to live in Vrindavan. The same thing, of course, in Mayapur, and even in the whole of Bengal, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's influence was so strong there. Practically, only for what, 1.5 years, he was propagating his Sankirtan movement while he was in Bengal. Then he left to South India. He went to Puri and then South India. But practically the whole of Bengal, people, they're touched by, even today, by remembering Nimai. Mostly they like to call him Nimai. They don't like to think of the sannyasi. They like to think of him before he left Bengal. So everywhere we find, all over Bengal, people, in some areas more than others, in those areas where there's been traditionally a lot of Vaishnava preaching, in Mednipur district with Shamananda, Rasikananda, that influence is there, and then all the way south in the whole of Utkal, Orissa, the influence is there of Shamananda and Rasikananda. There's some areas, the whole of East Bengal, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself personally went there, and so many important associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared there, with the exception of Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, whose forefathers were from East Bengal or from Srihatta, which technically could be said to be in Assam, but it at least borders. And Srivast is also from Srihatta, and Gadadha is from Chattagram, and Advaita is also from, born in Srihatta. So like that, in East Bengal, then the Sundarban region, we find there's so much influence of Vaishnavism. There are various areas, in the Katwa area due to Narahari, Narahari Sharaka. And all over Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's influence, and by his associates, and people remember up to the present time. And people, now we can go and visit and see. This is just like I was recently in Egg Chakra, and this is the place where he was born. This is the place where he made all the Tirthas appear, because his father wanted to go on a pilgrimage to the Ganga. So he brought brought all the holy rivers there. So we can go to these places and then hear, and then we hear the pastime, and we already heard it, but we hear it again, and we feel very happy to hear it again. And in the holy places, you'll find the Tirtha Pandas. They'll take people around, and they'll tell the same story. Or in the temple, you go in the temple. Do we go in any temple where they have a little time? They're not. So the priest will tell us the story of the temple, just like if we go to Namakkal, Nrsimha, and the priest will tell the story. He's already told it 200 times the same day. He doesn't get tired of telling it. He's happy to say it again and again and again and again. And the people, they benefit by hearing that. And they may, well, we've also heard it so many times, but we also like to hear it again. And here, yeah, this is Nrsimha. He appeared here. This is how he appeared. Here he is. He's so merciful. The famous holy places. Some are very famous, some not very famous. Probably, maybe even in this Salem city, many people, they may not even know that. I don't know. You know better than me. Ayodhya Patanam, that it's the holy place of Lord Rama's pastimes. Everyone knows or not? I don't think so. We should do some propagation. The most famous place, we should make Vrindavan the most famous. Maybe it's becoming the most famous, but still by far the most holy place in all of India and in the world for quote-unquote Hinduism is Varanasi. And just like we find so many foreigners living or visiting Vrindavan, thanks to Srila Prabhupada's preaching, we'll find so many living or visiting Varanasi. Not all for religious reasons, because it's on the tourist map. It's supposed to be something interesting. You can take a boat in the middle of the Ganga and see all the ghats. It looks very picturesque. And you can go in the alleys and all the old places, but most of them have been destroyed now in the name of progress, development. You can go to the burning ghat. That's something very interesting for people from civilized countries who don't burn the bodies of dead people in public. They consign them to ghostly life anyway, they're not going to have an auspicious future. So they see that, and the whole ambience, it's a city of death and it's a city of light. City of light. Kashi means city of light. Because anyone who dies there, they cross over. Anyone who dies on the bank of the Ganga, they cross over. But more so at Varanasi because of Lord Shiva, right? Is it? What is that verse that we Prabhupada quotes? The Muktidata, only Vishnu. You know that? Mukti Pradata Sarvesham? Hmm? Vishnu Eva Nasangshayam. Only Vishnu. So how does he get some special potency in Varanasi? No, he comes and chants Rama in the ear of dying people. And this way he delivers. Actually, it's not even a city of Lord Shiva. You know that? It's originally Vishnu's city, but he gave it to Shiva. And you can take it. You can have it. So everything belongs to Vishnu originally. So Lord Shiva told Parvati, I'm not sure where this quote comes from, when he came to this city, he said, look at this city, it's stretched out, it's like a boat stretched out along the Ganga, not of wood and iron, but for crossing with the light of illumination for people who it ferries over the sea of life. The Mayavadis, they like, it's a place up to the present day, so many Mayavadis, and they are seeking the light, right? Brahma Jyoti, Tamasima Jyoti Argamaya. They want to come out of the darkness, they want to come out of the darkness of material attachment, and they go to the light of the Brahma Jyoti. But that's also not full knowledge. But it's a little advancement, Prabhupada said. They said the Mayavadis and the Buddhists. It's a little advancement to become detached from material life. So that's a very difficult thing to do, as we find in the 12th chapter of Gita. Klesho dhikataras te sham abhyakta sakta tetasa. Difficult to absorb one's mind in the avyakta, in the unmanifest. And in Buddhism, they don't even go to the avyakta. They want to go to the... It's neither vyakta nor avyakta, or it's not both vyakta and avyakta. It's not neither. It's just impossible. So that's really difficult. If you have to meditate on the sound of one hand clapping, that's really difficult. If you have to meditate on the unborn, the unmanifest, the unseen, the unimagined, light beyond everything, well, that's pretty tough to meditate on unmanifest Brahman. But to meditate on the sound of one hand clapping, that's really difficult. It's not all of Buddhism. It's only in some schools of Zen. Well, they do like that. It's supposed to make you crazy. And then when you become crazy, then you get enlightened. Something like, I don't know. What do I know about Buddhism? So anyway, it's easier at Kashi to cross over. Actually, it's because of Rama, but then the Mayavadis let them think I'm doing my austerities, I'm doing my meditation. Let them think. Let them think what they like. Krishna gives them some mercy. You want it? Okay, go to Varanasi and die there, and you can be a chandala and die there. Oh, you don't have to be a Mayavadi sannyas. You get the same result. But if you want to think I'm a very great Mayavadi sannyas, yeah, okay, you go and live there, and then you can get delivered. All right. Krishna says, Tanaham dushatakru ran sangsare shu naradhaman kshipyami ajasam ashubhan asurish veva yonishu. Pretty tough, huh? If someone's dvishata, kruran, mentally cruel and physically cruel, not just has a deep sense of dislike toward Krishna, but actually they actually want to harm Krishna. The worst people in the whole world, sangsareshu naradhama, the worst. So they get what they get. They go repeatedly to take birth in the inauspicious wombs. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, I perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. What are you going to do? How are you going to help such people? Well, the tirthas are there. Anyone who goes to Ganga to drink water, they get benefit. One who comes with faith, they get so much more benefit. But anyone who somehow or other comes in contact with the tirthas, they're benefited. So the Vaishnavas, they're also tirthas, because darshane pavitra koro, just by seeing them, people are benefited. Now there may be people who are extremely envious and they go to holy places to destroy them. And that's the story in Varanasi and Mathura and Somnath and Puri. They went there specifically to destroy. So that's very, 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 very sinful. And these are famous destructions that were done. There's so many temples were destroyed, in maybe not all so famous, in Meerut. That was first when the Muslims, not Meerut, I can't remember now. Now in Pakistan, when the Muslims first came, they came from that side. They've kept records of it. They're very happy. We destroyed this temple and we killed so many people. All the records are written there. I'm just trying to remember the name. Multan. So it's hard to see how there could be any benefit for such people, but somehow or other they spend time there. Srila Prabhupada said, in reference to people who chant the holy names, thinking of Sai Baba, he also gets people to chant the holy names, or did. Prabhupada said, there used to be a list of quotes from Prabhupada from his letters, used to circulate by cyclo style, if you know what that is. Probably in the modern age people don't know what that is. It's an old system of hand printing. There used to be papers that would go around with Prabhupada's quotes, but you don't see them nowadays. Many quotes that were not written, not in writing. So Prabhupada, elsewhere. So in that, Srila Prabhupada said that the followers of Sai Baba, they have to suffer for their offenses, but when the effect of the offenses is clear, they will get benefit also from chanting the holy names. So even offensively, if one chants, benefit is there, although one has to suffer for the offenses. So somehow or other, if one bathes in the Ganga, it's hard to imagine that people are so envious, but Ganga is very merciful. No wonder she was asking how I have to go to the earth, but I'll have to absorb all the sinful reactions. So that's a really heavy thing to do. And then Krishna told her, the devotees will come and clear. And then what happens to the devotee? Well, they're cleared. They don't absorb sinful reactions. Very powerful devotees. Here is a quote from Vamana Purana, chapter 33. Tirthanam smaranam punyam darshanam papanashanam snanam mukti karam proktam api duskrita karamanaha. Even evildoers are blessed when they bring into memory, they even just remember the holy places, and visiting them absolves them from sins, and a bath there enables them to attain emancipation. Well, that would especially be in the case of those who think, oh, I'm sinful, I have to purify myself. But it's not specifically stated in this verse. Ganga and the holy rivers, they're very merciful. She purifies those who utilize her waters even without faith. We'll find along the bank of the Ganga, there are so many Muslims. Varanasi is, again, an example. There's so many Muslims living in that city, and they're not supposed to have faith in Ganga as being a holy river. We find in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that, of course, the Ganga flows through Bengal, through Navadvip area. So when Harihar Thakur, he was called before the Qazi for judgment, for the sin of chanting the holy names of Krishna. So the Qazi said, what's wrong with you? You're born in a good Muslim family, you have such a great opportunity to be... But why have you become a Hindu and you're chanting these names? And Harihar Thakur said, well, so many Hindus become Muslims, what's the harm if a Muslim becomes a Hindu? So the Qazi didn't like that, so he ordered that Harihar Thakur be beaten in 22 marketplaces. One or two should be enough to kill him, but just to show everyone that the body should be beaten. So even the dead body should be taken and beat. So everyone, just you Muslims, don't start chanting Hare Krishna. That's the idea. So after being beaten in 22 marketplaces, throw his body in the Ganga. Why? Because the idea that the Hindus think it's pious, so it must be the opposite. So he won't go to Jannat or any such thing. Throw him in the Ganga. And then that's the worst thing you can do to anyone after they die. Throw them in. That's the Muslim idea. It's the same in Bengal. Everything opposite. The Hindus have their banana leaf with the stem at the back. Then the Muslims do it this way. The Hindus start bathing from the top. The Muslims do from the bottom. Everything, whatever, opposite. But faith or no faith, she purifies. She's a nirvisheshvadi. Nirvishesh means without discrimination. So she doesn't discriminate. In that sense, she's a nirvisheshvadini. She accepts the dead bodies of even the most sinful people. Some beggar dies in Navadvip and throw in the Ganga, that's all. They don't. The municipal, the domes or the bungies come and they have to take away the dead body and throw in the Ganga. Nowadays they don't do that. I think it's illegal now. But you used to see. I remember at least twice I saw. One time it was in Mayapur. I went and I just saw in the middle of the Ganga some body floating down the Ganga with a big stomach, because the stomach inflates after the day, and a crow sitting and feasting on the body, the dead body. Another time in Patna, this must have been early 1980s, I went went for a bath at one ghat there. And there was no one else there bathing. And it was a big stink. And what had happened, some dead body had come to the side of the river. And it wasn't being washed away. It somehow had come to the side. And it was all stinking like anything. Dogs there. Anyway, I took baths because I remembered Prabhupada had said that people in Calcutta, they take baths even if there's stool in the river, they push it aside and they take bath anyway. So it may be. There used to be people who they want. They want that. The Jala Samadhi. So many Babaji's in Vrindavan, they used to think, when my body dies, then throw in the Yamuna. And that was thought very good. And no samadhi, and then people won't come and worship me afterwards. I think very good. Now it's illegal. Some scientific test that the Ganga water within a few minutes, anything, even dead bodies, all the germs, it just gets finished. Recently, that at ISKCON Juhu, because the that was before the lockdown, so people were visiting and they'd run out of this spray, antiseptic spray or something. So they're spraying people's hands when they came in the temple. It's supposed to be protecting against the virus germs. And then someone asked, what is it? Oh, it's Ganga Jal. And most Hindus would be very happy with this, but someone decided to complain. No, it was cow urine. Most Hindus would be happy with that. But cow urine? What is this? Is the urine of an animal? What is this? Anyone whose body is thrown in the Ganga, they're then mukti guaranteed. In Surat, there's a saying. What is that now? I can't remember. But in lifetime, in Surat, you enjoy this kaman, one kind of sweet in Gujarat. They manage to make it so it's full of ghee and cream and sugar, just about as rich as anything could possibly be. And maran in Kashi. Enjoy life. Not sinfully. And then you go and die. And there's actually the Takti Ganga Express. There's Surat to Varanasi. It starts in Surat and ends in Varanasi. They made the train. I don't know if people believe all these things. Nowadays people, they almost all die in hospitals, isn't it? Everyone. You're going to die, and they take you to a hospital. Now, what's the use? Just another lack of rupees going on. What's the point of dying in a hospital? So better die on the bank of the Ganga, or in the association of devotees, chanting, or anywhere remembering Krishna. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarupyas chakri pasin rupa chapati tanam pavane pyo vaishnave yo namo. Jai, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.